Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming. This morning, I want to pick up the thread of what has been presented over these past months or 6 weeks. Is there anybody, this is their first time this morning? Okay, so there are a few of you. So just bear with us. We are on a, we have been presenting a series of teachings over these past 4 to 6 weeks. I think if you go to our website, a number of these talks are there if you're interested. But basically, for those of you who have been here and those who are new, we've been looking at the basics. Coming back to the basics of this tradition, the fundamental teachings, many of which we have read or have thought about or think we know, perhaps haven't understood as deeply as could be possible. We would call these teachings, if we put them together, we would call this, in terms of the Eightfold Path of Buddhism, the kind of prescription of what the Buddha presented over 2,600 years ago to his students as the path to awakening. It had eight spokes. Eight fundamental practices, and one of them was called right view, which is so key. I mean, am I looking at life correctly? What is my view? Because if I'm misperceiving, if I'm looking at things incorrectly, if my vision is short-sighted, if I have nearsighted or long-sighted, or I have cataracts or whatever else. Or if I'm, worst case scenario, I'm blind, then getting around and it can be quite difficult. I don't know if that's agreement or disagreement. So you can understand in the same way that for those of us with bodies, you know, the clearer our vision is, the easier it is for us to navigate this world. In the same way, in terms of our mind, how it views life, the clearer our vision, the more we see things as they really are, the more easily we can navigate this life. We will not be always tripping, stumbling, walking into walls, running into each other, etc. We have begun over these past weeks with looking at some fundamental teachings of the Buddha that pertain to the preciousness of life, impermanence, the defects that are inherent in worldly life, and law of cause and effect. And the reason we reflect deeply on these, again, more deeply than intellectual understanding, because we know intellectual understanding, to know something intellectually is not necessarily we know knowing anything. I mean, I used to work many years ago with people who smoked. And it was very common for people to be smoking and saying, I know these things are bad for me. Right? They're smoking and they're saying, I understand that these things are bad for me. They're doing harm to my body. They're shortening my life. They're, you know, compromising my systems. As they, you know, this is in between drags. They might say things like that. So we see there's a vast incongruence, disconnection between what they intellectually know and the way they live their life, right? I mean, many people, the foods we eat, the things we drink, the same thing. I know this is not that good for me. Or I even know this might be harmful for me. But, you know, I enjoy it. Right? So again, we understand, all of us understand, and you know, we could go on and on, that in our normal life, this disconnection between what I might call our wisdom. Our wisdom is understanding how things really are. And our capacity to live our life according to wisdom or understanding or right view is very... For some people, it may only be that, the separation may be. For some people, it may be like that. For many of us, it may be something like this, and other things it's like this, and you know, there's a wide variety. But basically, we do not live from our wisdom. We live often from our foolishness, from our childishness, like that. I want to... We have this, at the same time we are doing these teachings, we have this, what we call an intensive going on. Many people in our community are involved in more intensely meditating on these things in a more formal way. But hopefully everybody is making use of these teachings. And we are using a book called The Words of My Perfect Teacher, which is a very traditional text from the Tibetan tradition. But again, these teachings are common to all Buddhist traditions. And what I want to look at is at the end of each chapter, the writer, Pachu Rinpoche, has a little verse. So in the chapter on the difficulty of fighting the perfect human birth with the freedom and the advantages, and I'll just talk about that briefly in a moment, at the end of his whole explanation that goes on for pages and pages and pages, using every possible explanation, metaphor, parable, way to get us to see it, at the end of all of that he says, although I have won these freedoms, I am poor in Dharma, which is their essence. Although I have entered the Dharma, I waste time doing other things. Bless me and foolish beings like me, that we may attain the very essence of the freedoms and the advantages. So again, very simply, and those who've been coming, perhaps understand, that when they talk about this precious human life, they're really not just saying, like, sort of just intrinsically being a human being is precious. Again, there may be a preciousness in life, which is also true. But they're talking about something much more specifically when they talk about these freedoms and these opportunities. That is, there is a sense that any of us who have come, we might say, to a path, a spiritual path, a path that promises a healing and transformation, that we are fortunate, and in a certain sense our life situation has brought us here, and that differs from many of the people we share this life with. What does that mean? Well, just physically, there are many people we know on this earth with us who are struggling just to feed themselves and their family, struggling just to have water to drink, struggling just to have shelter on a daily basis. So there are many people whose lives are so consumed with survival, having the leisure on a Sunday morning to come and meditate and to talk about these things is impossible. So that is a freedom that all of us here have because we're here. And no matter what our situation is in life, we all, some may be richer, some may be poorer, some may be healthier, some may be less healthy, they're all different situations. Some may live in bigger houses, smaller houses, but whatever, all of those, none of us are at that survival level. Why? Because we're here. And we know there are hundreds of millions, if not more, people in this world who don't have that way. So that's the many physical considerations. There are people living in significant times of physical calamities, people living in war zones. I mean, there are many things that people are living with today that prevents them from having this opportunity that we have, as well as mentally. Even more important, there are so many of these people on the earth whose minds are so dominated by anger, by resentment, whose minds are so inflamed with those kinds of, whose minds are sort of hellish mind states, is consumed with negativity, suffering, hurt, despair. So many people whose minds are so encapsulated by neediness and greed, all they can do is want, 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 want. There's so many beings whose minds are just kind of shrouded in a kind of dumbness that they really can't see beyond their immediate situation and any capacity for insight or looking into life in a more deeper way is totally beyond them, right? As well as there are people who are so consumed with thirst for money and power and fame and celebrity, who are so attached to finding luxury and sensuality. I mean, there's so many, again, in these most extreme things, their minds are just totally consumed by these types of mind state. The idea of what we are doing here, which is kind of stepping back and reflecting on life, to really see how it is not available. So this is why it is said for those of us who are here that we've gained a certain type of freedom from all these physical things and all these mental and emotional things which would so dominate the mind it would prevent us from looking more deeply. Is that clear? That's what they're talking about. And then when they talk about the opportunities, it means that again, here we are, and we are fortunate enough to live in a time when teachings that show us how to transform and heal and meditate and all these things are available to us. The Buddha lived 2,600 years ago, talking about the Buddhist tradition, but yet 2,600 years later, these teachings are still available to us. I mean, that's pretty, that's pretty incredible that these teachings have not died out, right? That all of a sudden, you know, that there are only two or three people left in some Himalayan cave somewhere. Not only have these teachings been preserved for 2,600 years, but they're available to us now, and they're so widely available. The texts are available, and there are so many teachers available, and still great masters available, right? And as well as we have practice centers. We have places where we can go and practice, where we can hear the teachings and be supported in the teachings and have friends who are also interested in the same thing. So these are all opportunities, right? We not only have the freedoms, but we have these wonderful opportunities. Again, there may be people who have this kind of freedom or opportunities, but there's no teachers available where they are. I mean, look at us. We kind of stumble out of bed and get in our car and drive a little bit, right? I mean, we don't have to, travel for 3 or 4 weeks up to some high mountain peak to access a teacher. I mean, it's so easy. So again, when one reflects on life and one sees that one has these incredible freedoms and opportunities, which are so rare. This is in Buddhism what's called the precious human life. It's a special kind of specialness. Is that clear? That's not simply just the preciousness of a human being. So it says, although I have won these freedoms, I am poor in Dharma, which is their essence. So even though I have these freedoms, and I have these opportunities which could allow me to move in the direction of meaning and value in life, right? Even though I have the time to really devote myself to healing and transformation, to really produce happiness and well-being and ease within my body, mind, even though it's all here available to me, still I am poor in Dharma. So again, I think these are so poignant because again, we can study these teachings, we can reflect on these teachings, we can even talk very intelligently and insightfully with each other about these teachings. And yet, at the end of the day, we have to ask ourselves, do I really live them? Although I have won these freedoms, I am poor in Dharma, which is their essence. Although I have entered the Dharma, and there are many people in this room, formally or informally, have entered the Dharma. We've kind of moved our life in the direction of following a spiritual path, whether we formally have committed ourselves or informally committed ourselves. But many of us here are you know, either at the door or inside the room of Dharma. Although I have entered the Dharma, I waste time doing other things. Right? Now this is interesting, because we could get hung up here. Again, to really enter the world of Dharma is not necessarily in the way of what's seen, right? So one could say, well, you know, I belong to the Florida Community of Mindfulness. I come here regularly for meditations. I participate in all the activities. I even volunteer. We had 25 people yesterday planting all those plants out there. There are many people here who volunteer their time to clean and to set up and all the, you know, we have no staff, so all the things are done. Haven't I entered the Dharma? And I would say, not really. Right? I mean, it's good work. But to enter Dharma means I entered the Dharma in my mind. I am really on the path of healing and transformation within my mind and in my relationship to others. Right? That's where we enter the Dharma. And so wasting time doing other things, again, there are many things that one can do in life that have, quote-unquote, aren't formally look like they're doing the Dharma. But if one's doing it with a mind that is open and aware and mindful and compassionate and present and wise, one is not wasting one's time, is it? So we're talking about when I waste my time doing other things, I'm wasting my time doing other things that are producing no value, no meaning. I'm just wasting time, just filling up time. And we know we live in a wondrous society that endlessly has developed the capacity to endlessly keeping us entertained with things that in essence are wasting our time, right? Everybody know what I'm talking about? I mean, this is a, you used to have to travel to Disney World, right, to kind of have, but we can just stay home and be constantly entertained now in our own homes, right? Right. I mean, in America, everybody has media rooms now, right? You used to have a little TV. Now you have a media room, right? And in your media room, you can what? Have everything that, you know, you could have the movies, the TV, the entertainment, the games, right? In almost as interactive a style as what you'd have to go for. I mean, right? Endlessly. We can be entertained. But at the end of the day, we'd have to ask myself, am I wasting time? Wasting time meaning what? Because I have this precious human birth. I have all these incredible opportunities and freedoms that so few people on this planet have. Am I using it? You know, and we will not use it in this meaningful way unless we keep this awareness of how precious and rare the opportunities each of us have been given. Now, again, I realize with all the people here, we're all different, and everybody may look at their life in different ways and think their situation is good or bad. But the bottom line, everybody here, you are only here because a significant number of these freedoms and opportunities have been given you, have been given us. Although I have won these freedoms, I am poor in Dharma, which is their essence. Although I have entered the Dharma, I waste time doing other things. Bless me and foolish beings like me, that we may attain the very essence of the freedoms and the advantages. We might, do we mind being called foolish? I would hope not. I mean, we are foolish beings, right? When we step back and look at our life, and look at how we spend our life, and the things that concern us, and the things that get us bent out of shape, and the things we get upset about, and the things we, focus on every day, right? That's so important. Again, when we step back, we might go and say, I am kind of foolish, right? It doesn't have to be a knife in the heart, but it can be just an awareness. In a certain way, we are still very much like children. Emotionally, we are still very much like teenagers, right? And we unfortunately function like that much of the time. Again, these things have been developed over these past weeks and in the readings. Are there any questions about this one? The freedoms and the advantages and what they mean? Yes.
I was thinking when you were reading that, you read it several times, and it sort of sets out the reality in these, I'm thinking of other things, because I'm thinking about, isn't it about where your mind is at?
Mm-hmm. It's so, definitely where your mind's at.
So these other things, it's kind of like he's setting up a duality, because in all things, it's independent, because it all really
Well, again, the question is, but isn't this a little dualistic? I mean, isn't everything you do, if you do it with the right mind, living in truth? Again, these are called the mind turnings. These are considered the first things, before one even enters a meditative path that one is reflecting on deeply. Again, if you look at your life, Nancy, and if you have really reflected on the preciousness of the opportunities, and if you find from morning till night you are endlessly mining wisdom, right, and not wasting a moment. Not wasting a moment. Again, that you're only reading Dharma texts, but that you really are applying them. Then you've gotten this one. Okay. If you haven't gotten this one, if you look at your life and you haven't, then we need to continually reflect. So it is, it is a preliminary teaching, but it's a preliminary teaching that's trying to, energize us. And again, once you get it, you get it. But many of us aren't there yet. And even if we are there, we may get it one day and not get it the next day. So therefore, this constant reflecting, this reminder. Because it's very easy to get just, caught up in our lives. Right? It all looks so important, our to-do lists, our errands, right? Right? And again, not that they're not, quote-unquote, important, but if I said, does accomplishing them really increase my capacity for happiness and well-being and the ability to benefit others? I never thought about it in that way. It's a different criteria. So there are many ways of looking at this. Any other questions about, yes?
Brett, I was thinking as you were speaking about the interplay between direct experience and some abstract concepts that we are constantly dealing with in our lives. The Zen tradition speaks to the importance and emphasis of direct experience.
Right.
But it also speaks to abstract concepts such as faith and trust.
Mm-hmm.
We have faith and trust in our teacher, faith and trust in hopefully in other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday we had a wonderful day. Somehow, you know, people manifested, we trusted that they they did.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also forces that, because faith and trust is an abstract concept, it's not a direct experience. Your faith and trust starts out as an anticipation. You anticipate something's going to happen, and you have trust that it will, and it sometimes does, sometimes doesn't. But my question is, what about the times where there's a contradiction between the trust that you come to your life with and the actual experience, which is not what you anticipate?
Yeah, so I'm not sure. I mean, that's a big question. I ask for questions a little more specific, but so the question is about the relation of experience and abstract thinking. To me, trust and confidence are not abstract. They're direct experience. The direct experience is what you experience and what you feel. If you have confidence in something and it's just intellectual, I wouldn't call that real confidence, because it's just a thought. And what do people know about thoughts? They come and go. And you may have a confident thought 1 minute. You know, you may have confidence in somebody 1 minute, and 10 minutes later, something goes on, and you all of a sudden you have no confidence in them, right? You have a thought, I like this, and then something happens, and you decide, you know, I really hate them. You know, how do I ever like them? So, to me, direct experience is deeper than thought. When you have confidence in something, you know it. You know that because you have an experience with somebody or something that gives you this sense of, I mean, even to put it in words is hard, but it's deeper than thought. Yeah, thought is not to be trusted because it's a pointer. And if we don't have that direct experience, people didn't show up yesterday because of an expectation, or they didn't show up yesterday because of an abstract thought. They showed up yesterday, why? Because there's something going on in their hearts and minds. We think in our delusion that thought precedes experience, but it's the other way around. And if thought does precede experience, then it's a very, not very stable. Yeah. Yeah. So we want our confidence in things, our trust in people, our trust in the Dharma, to be based on experience. When it's experience, when it goes, wow, yeah, I've tried this out, and it works. Yeah, I have direct experience, so therefore I have confidence. Yeah, I've trusted this person, and I've been keeping my eye on them, and yeah, they seem to follow through with what they say. You know, trust, based on experience. I mean, if I go, tea, I'm saying tea because I've already had the experience of it. When I say the word, that comes after. But many people are so cut off from experience, they think it's only when you say tea that it becomes a real experience. No. You know? If you said to me, Fred, do you like tea? And I said yes, there was a knowing before I said yes. You understand? You know, we think words come first, experience comes first. I mean, if you said, Fred, you like tea, and I said, yes, no, maybe, then there's no real experience, is there? Because my words are just floating around. I'm coming up with an answer. But when there's real, you know, experience, and so when we trust experience, I mean, many people are so screwed up because they don't even trust their own experience. Right? Something's happening to them, they're living with somebody, they're treating them a certain way, and they say, oh, you know, but I know he loves me. Have you ever heard that one? How do you know he loves me? Well, he says he does. Well, how does he treat you? How does it feel like to be with him? And then all of a sudden you hear something totally different, don't you? Now, how can somebody say that? Because they're not in touch with their experience. They're lost in their thoughts and their needs and their wants and their expectations. Very dangerous way to live. So we want to be able to live grounded in real experience, in real confidence. And most importantly, confidence in our own experience and not in our thoughts. But that's another whole issue. So that was the freedoms and the advantages. The second one we looked at was, again, so key. That it's embarrassing for me to even say it because I know what's been talked about. And everybody in here is going to say, I understand that. And that is impermanence. I mean, there's not a person in here, I don't think, would say, no, I don't. I think everything is permanent. I mean, I was born like this. My body hasn't changed in all these years. Everybody, you know, who was with me in first grade is still with me, and they look exactly the same. I mean, all of us would acknowledge, yeah, things change. Everything changes. Right? So what does Pacho Rinpoche say? So his verse, again, after pages and pages of just trying to beat us over the head with impermanence, at the end of which, again, because he knows us so well. So after he's gone through this whole thing, made his best shot at everything to get us to see what's really going on, his last verse says, impermanence is everywhere. Yet I still think things will last. Does he know us? I have reached the age, the gates of old age, yet I still pretend I am young. Right. Bless me and misguided beings like me, that we may truly understand impermanence. Again. Impermanence is everywhere, right? We sit down in meditation. What do we notice about our thoughts, feelings, perceptions, sensations? We notice what? Impermanent. Endlessly coming and going, right? Is there anybody here? I mean, there may be, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 people here today. Did anybody have a different experience this morning? One thought continually the whole time. We laugh because it's so foolish, right? We know in the realm of mind, everything is impermanent. Thoughts, feelings, perceptions, body sensations, constantly changing. And when we look to the external world, sound, sights, everything we see, constantly changing. Every day we pick up the news, I mean, it's all about change. Everything's changing. You look at our life, what do we see? Whether you're 10 years old, or 20, or 30, or 40, or 50, or 60, or 70, when you look back on your life, all you can say at the end is what? Wow, have things changed? Right? You know, I'm still not with my best friend in first grade. I'm not even with the best friend in third grade. I can't even remember who the one in fifth grade was. I mean, it's right. I mean, change. Right? Why do things change? Because it is their nature. Nothing is permanent. Nothing is solid. Impermanence is everywhere. Everywhere means where? Everywhere. Everywhere. Anywhere we look. Outside or inside. Impermanence is everything. Yet I think things will last. Do you hear that? Though still I think. Because again, our thinking is not aligned with reality. Once again, Alex, those who are lost in thoughts and concepts will not even see what is right in front of them. It is very clear to anybody who watches their mind that their mind, thoughts, feelings, perceptions are impermanent. Well, what is the conclusion from that? I mean, what is the conclusion you draw from that? Are they something to base one's life on? Are they stable, permanent, solid, true thing? Always consistent? No, just the opposite. I mean, you know, based on history, is your thinking mind what you want to base your life on? I mean, is that a good bet or a good risk? Anything that changes second by second? I mean, if you want stability and consistency in your life. And yet what? We have a thought that says, I like it, and we go after it. I mean, we have a thought that says, I want to go eat it. We're full. We just ate. Half an hour later, there's a thought, gee, I'd like something or other. And like, you know, like the, like the nose, the bull, you know, with the thing through the nose, the little boy is pulling. We follow our thoughts. Right? Somebody doesn't do what we want, we don't like them. Somebody does what we want, we like them. Right? I mean, do I need to keep going on and on? Impermanence is everywhere, yet I still think things will last. I have reached the gates of old age. Now, there are people in this room who have reached those gates. But you know, in these days, in our crazy world, when teenagers reach the gate of 20, you know, it's like traumatic for them. And when the 20-year-olds reach the gate of 30, and when the 30-year-olds reach the gate of 40, and when the 40-year-olds reach the gate of 50, it just goes on and on. Right? I remember when my kids said to me, when they turned 30, all of a sudden, like, they're getting old. I mean, I was like, wow, I'm getting old. This life is serious, you get old in it. I have reached the gates of old age, yet I still pretend I am young. Is that not true for all of us? How many of us are being dragged through the aging process, kicking and screaming and frustrated and unhappy and wishing it was different, and right? Even though it is normal. Aging is normal. It is one of the most normal things that one can do. Right? Again, does anybody disagree with me? No. See how rational and intelligent we are. And yet, every time we look in the mirror, we wonder, who's that? Right? How come they don't still look like they did 5, 10, 15, 20, Bless me and misguided beings like me, that may we truly understand impermanence. How do you know that you really get it? How would you know that you really got this reflection on impermanence, that you really understood it deeply? How would you know it? Because you would be able to converse intelligently about impermanence? Is that how you'd get it? That you'd be able to sit up here and give a teaching on impermanence and everybody would say, well, that was brilliant. No, that's all intellectual. How would we know that we really have gotten it about impermanence? Yes.
When you're at peace with all
change. When you're at peace. There's a direct experience, Alex. So how do we know it? Because we are no longer thrown by the changes of the world. Why? Because we understand it's normal. Everything is normal. Change is normal. Sickness is old. Old age is normal. Death is normal. Just, change is normal. So there is ease. There's peace. Because we have wisdom. Wisdom, remember, wisdom means the capacity to see things as they really are. If impermanence is a fundamental mark of this life, of all phenomena, whether at the subatomic level or at the, you know, most physical kind of level, the mental level, if impermanence is the nature of things, then why don't we accept that and live with that, at peace with that, with ease? If you are, and again, I'm not talking about the ease that comes from drugging ourselves or, you know, there's lots of ways that people try to find ease in life. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a very simple, natural way. It doesn't cost anything. It's available to all of us. It's called understanding. Impermanence is everywhere, yet I still think things will last. I have reached the gates of old age, yet I still pretend I am young. Bless me and misguided beings. Right? In the last one, he called us foolish. This time he's calling us misguided. Like me. That we may truly understand impermanence. Again, not so we pass the test, but so we can be happy in this life of constant change. We only suffer because we can't accept it. And that's the truth. Does anybody know how their day is going to unfold today? Exactly. Moment to moment. What? Can anybody say they know exactly what's going to happen today? Even though we may have an idea, we may have plans, right? But yet the truth is, does anybody know? And we would have to say what? No. We don't know. Why? Because things are impermanent. Things change all the time. Bless me and misguided beings like me that we may truly understand impermanence. Any questions about this? Yes.
Well, I was thinking about reflecting on what you said about impermanence after a small group session. Mm-hmm. I guess some of the resistance I was trying to reflect within myself about impermanence is, and I think it's needless, this anxiety, is when you really love somebody, a parent or a spouse, and they're going to go over, their impermanence exists just like your own, go away. That doesn't mean that love and that deep feeling of gratitude and goes. That's the thing that you keep. And that's not a thought. That's something intrinsic within that is. And that doesn't change, I think, with impermanence. That's not impermanent. That's, well, I mean, it is, I guess, you know. When you yourself pass on. But it's like a gift. It's like a,
yeah. I mean,
you know what I mean.
You know, well, I know. But do you? Yeah. Oh, I understand. Yeah. But do you understand what you're getting? Yeah. Because I think you already know the answer. Yeah. Because there are things in your past that you felt very strongly about, a love or a feeling, right? And yet, you probably haven't felt it one in years. Why? Because you're a bad person? No. Because of the nature of things. Yeah. Right. Things come and go. Feelings come and go. Relationships come and go. The type of relationship, it's just endless. Right? It doesn't mean because we feel something deeply this moment, we may not feel that way a year from now, 5 years from now. No, does that mean, no, you're a bad person? No, but I mean, how can you keep up with it? Right? mean, if you kept up with all those deep emotions that you have of, you know, when we gain what we want, we are what? Happy. Great happiness. When we lose what we're attached to, we are what? Sad. Deeply sad. And yet over time, we will find what? We'll develop new attachments, we'll have new losses, and the old ones will, and you know, that's not bad. It's just the way it is. Or you can't keep track of it. There are people who keep tracking it. You know, those are called people who live in the past. Have you ever met people like that? Yeah, they're still tracking it. Right? There are people like that. They're just endlessly lost in their path. They're just endlessly tracking past events. Right? Right? But life is actually unfolding in the present. And if we're, you know, still consumed with relationships and gains and losses from the past, or conversely, still, living in the future, worrying, anticipating, expecting, how can we have any energy to really be present to life right now? So, and how permanent is an experience? I mean, I feel like am I a party pooper here? I feel like a little bit like a party pooper. I mean, everything that I have said for the last hour is gone. Right? I mean, should I just give up? I mean, everything I've said is gone. Everything you might have felt in response to what I said is gone. Traces may remain, hopefully, the meaningful ones. But the experience is gone, because we're right here having a new experience. So if you are holding on to an experience from 30 minutes ago, trying to make it permanent, you know, you couldn't be present for this, could you? So it gets really very kind of chaotic, right? When we're endlessly trying to hold on to things from the past, we're endlessly worrying about or fantasizing expectations about the future, and still trying to have something meaningful going on in the present. And still get our shopping list done. You know? Very busy. Precious human birth, opportunities and freedoms. What am I doing with my time? Yeah. Impermanence is everywhere, yet I still think things will last. I have reached the gates of old age, and yet I pretend I am young. Bless me and misguided beings like me, that we may truly understand impermanence. So again, the same way, if we reflected deeply on the opportunities and the freedoms, deeply, we would find that we are kind of effortlessly really moving our life in the direction of meaningful experiences and meaningful use of our time. In the same way, if we really understood and reflected deeply on impermanence, again, as the unfoldings occurred in life, we would meet them with ease and peace and understanding. And we would not be holding on to things. Why? Because we know they're impermanent. Why hold on to something that has no capacity of delivering anything of any meaning to us? It's gone. And even the things we have, my watch, my tea, I mean, this tea, which I do enjoy my tea, but as soon as I drink it, it's gone. Right? And this thermos will be empty. Right? And that's just the way it is. And this watch can break, and this can disappear, and these flowers will all wilt, and I will die, and, you know. Is there anything I'm missing? That's just the way it is. Right? And if I don't see that, then I will create all kinds of emotional afflictions and all kinds of ups and downs and all kinds of conflicts in my mind, and you know, I could just be a mess, right? We all have that potential, right? To just be a mess about life and in our life. and yet with clear seeing. We're seeing things clearly. Each of us have this capacity for happiness and well-being and ease of mind, but we need clear view. And again, please remember that these, and there are two others, these reflections were traditionally given before anybody crossed their legs or were given any instruction in meditation. It's like, first thing, get clear on this. So when you undertake the real process of healing and transformation, you know, you're not all over the place. It's very difficult to benefit from the meditative tradition and the insight tradition of a spiritual path if we're all over the place. Right. So it is worthwhile for us to spend time. Right. I think I've said this the other week. There was somebody in our Sangha down in Naples who's probably been practicing 10 or 15 years, and she said, part of this intensive, we've also been looking deeply in the Four Noble Truths. And she said, you know, I mean, I've known about the Four Noble Truths for 10 or 15 years, and I always thought I knew them. And she said, this is the first time I realized they applied to me. And I was like, oh. But you know, it's humorous, but it was very poignant, because she said it was just, I was dumbfounded. But I've been aware of these teachings, you know, thought I knew them, talked about them, you might even taught them, and I never really realized they had implications for me. What she said, you know, oh, impermanence has implications for me. Yes, it has deep implications for all of us. Because we live in the world of impermanence. That is our world. Everybody in here, we all live in the same world. It is the world of impermanence, where there is nothing solid and permanent that we can count on. Nothing. Except what? Our capacity to see clearly. That's what we need to be cultivating. When we cultivate that, and we have the wisdom that really see things as they are, then we can live in this world of change. We can live in this world where things are constantly forming and reforming. With ease, peace. That's what the teachings are about. The Buddhist teachings are not theoretical teachings, they're not theological teachings. They are teachings that came from the Buddhas and all the teachers since then, from their own looking deeply into life. Whose life? Our life. Life. And they've extrapolated. They've seen the big picture. We're all lost in the little picture, right? Each and every one of us in this room have the little picture of what? Of our own little lives. Right? And we're all just lost in it. And all of a sudden, luckily, people come along who've kind of looked at everybody's life and said, you're all going through the same thing. You know? But you can't see it because we're just so caught up in our own little life and think there's something unique and special about my life and my melodrama. Right? We are also attached to our drama and melodrama. But when we step back and go, what's the big picture here? Then we have the capacity for wisdom, for seeing clearly. And that seeing clearly, again, liberates us. Right? You know, where you hear these words, awakening, enlightenment, liberation. You know, it means awakening from our misperceptions, our wrong views, so we can see clearly. Anything not clear? So again, I'll be back next week. I'll finish the other two. And then I want to begin to move into, in the Buddhist teaching, there's something called the three marks of existence. The first two are covered in these preliminaries, but the third one is the teaching on non-self, which for many of us is very difficult to see clearly, that the same way everything is marked with impermanence, everything that appears solid and self-existence is really not. But we'll hopefully get into that next week. So good.